Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at SmartEye. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we feature thought leaders doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little about us, SmartEye is the global leader in human insight AI, technology that understands, supports, and predicts human behavior in complex environments, bridging the gap between humans and machines for a safe and sustainable future. Today's episode features a Q&A with our own Graham Page. Graham leads the Media Analytics Business Unit as Global Managing Director of Media Analytics at Affectiva, a SmartEye company. He pioneered the integration of biometric and behavioral measures to mainstream brand and advertising research for 26 years as Executive VP and Head of Global Research Solutions at Kantar. Over the course of the last year or so, there's been a thread of debate in the media regarding the validity and ethics of facial emotion recognition. This has often reflected the point of view of some data privacy groups who are concerned about the use of facial technologies across several use cases, or the opinions of commercial interests who offer alternative biometric technologies or traditional research methodologies. Scrutiny of emerging technologies is vital, and the concerns raised are important ones for debate. Affectiva has led the development of the emotion AI field for over a decade and the use of automated facial expression analysis in particular. So let's listen in to learn more. Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. With me today, I have our own Graham Page, Global Managing Director, Media Analytics at Affectiva, a SmartEye company. So thank you, Graham, once again, for making the time to speak with me today.
Not at all. Always a pleasure.
So to start, we have had you on the podcast before, but maybe you can give us a super brief intro of yourself and your role for those who haven't heard you speak on the podcast before.
Sure. So I've worked in, I guess, the marketing, market research and marketing research technology industries for about 30 years. I did a lot of work on research frameworks and research products, particularly in the kind of brand and advertising space. And I've done a lot of work in the neuromarketing industry. So a lot of work investigating the different merits of different kind of methods to measure people's responses beyond what they can say in surveys. So, you know, I've looked at EEG, I've looked at kind of fMRI studies, looked at GSR, eye tracking, facial analysis, unsurprisingly. So I had a lot of history in investigating what works and what doesn't work in terms of understanding how people respond to things. And then over the last few years, obviously, I've come and worked for Affectiva, which is obviously a joy. And I work as the head of the media analytics practice. So applying Affectiva's emotion AI technology to the marketing and market research space.
Perfect. Yes. And I was just going to ask you, so for those who are unfamiliar with Affectiva, how would you best summarize our media analytics offerings?
Sure. So obviously Affectiva, now part of SmartEye, and it has had a long heritage over the last decade in building technologies that help understand how people react, particularly based on their facial expressions. So our algorithms can help understand how people's faces are moving and what that might mean in terms of their reactions to any kind of experience based on video, obviously collected with their consent. And so using that technology in the media space, we do a lot of work with, say, entertainment businesses to help them understand audience reaction to entertainment content. We do an awful lot of work with the advertising industry to help, you know, some of the world's biggest advertisers, you know, test their advertising before it goes to air so that they can make sure they're going to get a good return. And so they can understand really if it's hitting the mark among their target audience in terms of the desired emotional reaction in particular. But we also offer the technology in qualitative research, so helping researchers who work with focus groups and depth interviews understand a bit more about how people are feeling about the topics that they're talking about, especially in online settings where perhaps the same nonverbal cues that a qualitative researcher might have always been able to have when they were in the room, you know, when those things aren't available. And finally, we also offer the technology as a software development kit. So businesses can also integrate the facial sensing technology that we offer into their products and services within the media space.
Okay. So I'm going to dive right into this. So recently, there has been a bit of a debate regarding the validity and ethics of facial emotion recognition. So can you talk through
who is concerned, why they are concerned, and maybe why this scrutiny is perhaps not such a bad thing.
Of course. And let's start with the last one. I mean, I think obviously any technology, particularly something that is, you know, new and disrupts a market, you know, any technology is always going to come under scrutiny. And I think that's entirely right. I mean, I think there are some, you know, to this day, you know, when I explain what we do, some people are still surprised that, you know, you can use, you know, just a webcam, for instance, to measure people's facial expressions and code that automatically. So it's, you know, it's kind of a novel technology, even though, you know, we've been in the business for a decade now, it's still novel to many people. So it's understandable that people want to, you know, check out if it works and you know, may have some concerns about it. However, I think some of the debate recently has kind of gone beyond what I think is, you know, simple kind of healthy scrutiny into something which I think, you know, begins to distort some of the underlying science. And I think that's obviously where we get a bit concerned when things are being misrepresented. So we're seeing, I guess, kind of debate in two fields. One, you know, there are definitely some people within the marketing industry who, you know, perhaps have a competitive product to offer, who are, you know, making noise about the validity of facial coding. And, you know, to an extent, you know, that's healthy competition and that's fine. But I think where we perhaps, you know, draw the line a little bit is in, you know, the interpretation of some of the science. And then also we're seeing some discussion of the technologies, or at least I guess allied technologies, from regulatory bodies and kind of privacy groups who are perhaps understandably concerned about how a camera-based technology might be used, you know, beyond just the kind of the media space. So it's probably, you know, discussion of slightly different topics coming from both those parties, but, you know, as we said, always happy to discuss what we do and the validity thereof.
Absolutely. So there seem to be criticism centered around three different areas. So there's, you know, face reading tech is an invasion of privacy. It is inaccurate and potentially biased to different groups of people, and inferring emotional states from facial expressions is not based on sound science. So let's break this down. So start with the first one. How would you address concerns around the use of this technology as an invasion of privacy?
No, and obviously, look, this is such an important topic, and I think we'd share all of those concerns around kind of camera technologies being used without people's consent to do things that they're unaware of. I think, you know, when this gets raised, I think there is often a misunderstanding, or perhaps an overgeneralization by some of these bodies about the kind of technologies that we're deploying in particular. So it's often the case that facial expression analysis is kind of confused with facial identification. So for clarity, you know, the technologies that Affectiva deploy do not, and in fact cannot, identify an individual from their face. In fact, as far as we're concerned, someone's identity, the unique arrangement of their features that make them recognizable as a specific individual, that's actually noise that we have to ignore. You know, our system is designed to understand, you know, is there a face in view in the video, and is that face showing a smile, or is it showing a brow furrow, or is it showing a raised eyebrow? Actually, all the things that make someone's face differ, you know, one from another, actually get in the way of that signal. So our algorithms effectively are ignoring that. So, you know, when people are worried about, you know, identity or facial identification, I don't think those concerns really apply to what we do. And there is a second and also really important point, which is, you know, our contracts specify, and our, you know, all our use cases with our clients specify that, you know, we won't work with any system or any use case where someone will be filmed without their consent. So all the processing of people's facial expressions, the collection of facial video, where we're involved, does not happen without people's consent. So no one's being filmed without knowing about it, and everybody is typically being, providing video in the context of a research interview where they have explicitly said yes, that's okay to record them. So again, I absolutely think share many of the ethical concerns around the use of kind of facial identification technology on crowds of people by law enforcement, for instance. But that's definitely not what we do, and in fact, we're not actually able to identify anybody from the video that we collect.
Great points. So, you know, next up is the topic of bias. So I know we can't speak for other companies. I do know that Affectiva has spent years prioritizing mitigating bias of our algorithms. Can you speak to the lengths that we have gone in order to address this?
And again, I think, you know, questions around AI bias, particularly against, you know, typically underrepresented groups in society, are absolutely valid concerns and actually things, again, that we would share. I mean, I think what you've seen from some groups is, you know, both the assertion that, you know, these kind of technologies are biased against certain people and actually that they don't work. Again, often that is misunderstanding, I think, a little bit the, you know, the kind of technology that somebody like, you know, Affectiva deploys. Again, we're not deploying facial identification technology. I think there are legitimate concerns about some of that tech, about its accuracy and bias. But again, that's not really applicable here. Certainly from our perspective, the work that we do, we take a great deal of care, as you said, to make sure that we are not developing algorithms that favor one group over another. And this is where, you know, kind of the vast amount of data that we've processed does give us some advantages. So, you know, we've I think kind of processed over, you know, 14 billion frames of video. There is a huge amount of data that we have available from 90 countries. So we can pull from that to train our algorithms in a way that perhaps others, you know, cannot. And it means that we can pull very diverse data, diverse in terms of culture and country, but diverse in terms of gender, diverse in terms of ethnicity, diverse in terms of age. And that really allows us to then train the algorithms on this very representative data set of the world effectively. And it also means that both, you know, that means both that the algorithms are perhaps intrinsically more accurate, but it also means we can go and check that. We can go and look at the performance of the algorithms among different groups, and we don't release anything that doesn't perform pretty comparably across, you know, age, gender, ethnicity, country, and so on.
Absolutely. Then the third area, which is a bit direct, that inferring emotional states from facial expressions is not based on sound science, as expressions do not have a universal meaning or a one-to-one relationship with emotional states, and their meaning varies significantly by context. How would you address this claim?
And I think that, you know, this is, there's a lot to unpack in this one, so this may, we'll try and break it down. I mean, yeah. I think that there's a bit of an implication that, you know, and again, a generalization from some really interesting work by people like Lisa Feldman Barrett, that, you know, that she, you know, she's challenged some of the work of Paul Ekman, that the facial action coding system that you know, a lot of these technologies are based on is itself founded upon. But to kind of generalize from that to say, hey, these technologies don't work, I think is going way too far and doesn't stand up to scrutiny. So just one kind of immediate point is, you know, Affectiva and many of the users of technologies such as Affectiva, you know, have done the validation work to show that there are concrete relationships between, you know, facial expressions when people are exposed to content and then behavioral or sales outcomes. So, for instance, and Affectiva and Mars some years ago, you know, published validation work showing that, you know, the degree to which people showed positive expressions while they watched an ad was then linked to the sales effectiveness of that advertising. And that makes sense, right? If, you know, if you feel good about, you know, the content that you're, or advertising that you're watching, you're perhaps more favorably disposed to that ad or that ad's message or brand. So it makes sense that this happens, but you know, the evidence is there. Likewise, Kantar, one of our larger clients, published their own independent study showing again that they could predict the sales effectiveness of advertising based on, again, the expressiveness of viewers while they watch the ad. So if people, you know, were engaged enough to show a lot of facial expressions, that was a good sign for the sales effectiveness of the ad. And also, you know, we've seen work done that, for instance, we did with a further client, Unruly, that showed we could predict the memorability of advertising, you know, some weeks after exposure, again, based on the extent to which they showed peaks in kind of emotional engagement as shown on the face while they watched the ad. So again, ads that made people feel stuff, that showed and made them feel enough stuff to show it on the face, are more memorable, but also they're shown to have more sales effects. So again, I think it's hard to argue that, you know, this stuff just doesn't work, in the face of that kind of evidence. You just wouldn't see those behavioral outcomes and that predictive power of the technology if the tech just didn't work. So I would take issue with the generalization that this is somehow, not accurate, not valid, and somehow that the scientific community have walked away from this, because also, our technology is used very widely in academic settings. So, I'll kind of unpack that a little bit more, in my next answer.
I was hoping you could explain a little bit more about emotional states and what their meaning really implies based on the context that they are in. How does this vary? And can you just explain a little bit more about what that is and what that entails?
And this, I think, is kind of the most interesting part of the discussion in some ways. So again, some people have concerns about the use of facial expression technologies, because they're looking at work, which is really, really interesting work by Lisa Feldman Barrett, where she challenged this idea that there are universal signals for specific emotional states. And to just get technical for a second, she specifically challenged some of the work by Paul Ekman from the 70s, which was pretty foundational in the face analysis, the study of facial expressions in the academic community. He'd found that there were six or seven facial expressions that seemed to have universal meaning around the world. Her work was interesting in that, or Lisa Feldman Barrett's work was interesting in that it did also find that there were commonalities in people's interpretation of those expressions. But her point was that there were also a lot of exceptions to those rules based on context. And that's kind of true, right? I mean, I think that picture where there are some universals, but there's also a strong influence of context is correct. So, a smile will often mean joy, and will often mean joy all around the world, but it might also mean embarrassment. You might smile because you're embarrassed rather than because you're happy. And likewise, you may, lower your eyebrows, because you're thinking about something, but you might also lower your eyebrows because you're confused or because you don't like what you're seeing. So there are definitely differences in the signal that are often generated by context and which we need to be aware of. However, again, I think there's been some overgeneralization of that science to be then interpreted as, oh well, facial expression analysis doesn't work, and that I think, as we've already discussed, I don't think is true. Just focusing on Lisa Feldman Barrett's work, I think, then ignores a lot of other science that's out there that reinforces the idea that there are universals in expression. So in 2021, there was a really interesting paper by Cohen and Kaltner and others that was published in Nature, where they took a totally different approach and found a huge amount of commonality in the facial expressions that people show across the world in situations where you might expect them to be feeling similar things. So for instance, they studied, I think they took something like 6 million YouTube videos, analyzed the facial expressions that people showed in those videos, and found that where the context, where the social context was the same, people showed very similar expressions. So in for instance, at weddings, where you might expect a lot of happiness, you saw the same expressions of joy being shown across hundreds of countries. In martial arts videos, people showed the same signals of concentration. In kind of unboxing videos, people showed the same expressions of awe, and when people were working out, they were showing the same expressions of pain, for instance. So there was a huge amount of commonality across the video, what are really naturalistic videos rather than the perhaps slightly more artificial settings that Ekman used. So there's a lot of it's fine to, I think, ask some questions of some of the Ekman work, but there is a lot of other science that also says there is universality of expression and across the world. And we've also found that. I mean, we recently did a study just looking specifically at the millions of videos that we've got. And again, we found across the 90 countries that we work in, there was actually a very specific and clear common set of expressions that tended to be evoked by advertising. So even within the the confines of how people respond to advertising rather than just, you know, kind of a in broader social context, we're seeing that there is a lot of commonality in expression. So this idea that you can't infer, you know, this idea that you can't infer expressions across cultures because the context is too different, I think doesn't itself hold up to scrutiny. Now, that said, there is an important point, which is, I think, you know, context clearly does have a role to play in this. But one of the things that's important about our system is that, you know, we don't employ it ineffectively in a kind of a blind sense. So certainly in the market research space, for instance, when it comes to researching audience response to content or advertising, you know, our technology is typically being used by an analyst. It's being used by a human who's interpreting that alongside other signals. And in particular, they know the context to which the person is responding. So, you know, if someone's just been told a joke and they smile, there's a pretty strong chance that's a positive response. If they've just been shown something really embarrassing and they smile, that's much more likely to be an embarrassment response. And the analyst knows it. So the analyst understands the context in which the data was elicited and can respond accordingly. So, you know, I do share some of the concerns that, you know, a completely blind kind of a smile always means happiness approach would be problematic, but that's not really the way the technology is used. So, you know, I think there is absolutely a valid debate here, but I think it is not true to conclude from, you know, one research group's work that actually facial analysis is invalid and there's no useful signal there.
Absolutely. So we've covered a lot of ground today. So based on our conversation and your work and your expertise in general, if you had one takeaway for the audience listening, what would you like to tell them?
Sorry if this has been a long one. I know we have covered a lot of ground. I think a couple of things to take away. One is clearly there is no magic bullet when it comes to understanding viewers' responses or consumer responses. So all technologies have their drawbacks. So, you know, it's absolutely true that not every single emotional response that people have has a facial signal, for instance. So there are some things like, I would say, pride, for instance, is very hard to get from the face, yeah. Right? So if that's your target emotion that you want to evoke in people, you know, you're probably going to have to talk to them as well. So there's no, you know, I certainly don't think we would ever suggest, you know, that facial technologies, emotion AI can be used in isolation to answer every question. But it does, I think, have an important role to play in the research toolkit. And certainly when it comes to trying to measure people's reactions in the moment, measuring whether they're engaged, whether they're paying attention, whether they are experiencing the kind of feelings that you as, say, a filmmaker or as an advertiser or the designer of a customer experience want them to feel, I think there's very little that can do that job and measure what's happening in the moment at the kind of scale that emotion AI can, because, you know, it does just need a camera. And as long as you've obtained consent, that means that it can be scaled, you know, across countries, you know, with lots of people in the research, whereas other technologies, and you know, I've used all these other technologies, so I can comment directly, you know, other technologies that require you to apply electrodes to the head or to other parts of the body, you know, that intrinsically becomes a barrier to scale. And so, yeah, you know, a long takeaway, but I'd say, you know, emotion AI isn't the answer to everything, but it's certainly a very strong answer to measuring how people feel in the moment at scale.
Absolutely. Also, for our listeners, do you have anywhere they can go to learn more, or do you have any other kind of call to action for them?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we, you know, would always be happy to hear from anybody who wants to discuss this further. There is more material on this available on our website in particular. So there's several blogs, for instance, recently that we've written on this, and I'd encourage people to go there. And again, we'll continue to publish the validity of our work. So our accuracy rates, for instance, are published in academic journals. So again, happy for people to go hunt those down and look those up. So yeah, but plenty of stuff on the website in particular, but happy to hear from anybody.
That's great. And I'll drop in a couple of things in our show notes. I know you wrote a great blog along with Rana recently on face value, the power of facial signals in human behavioral research. So that's a great resource. And we actually did interview Lisa Feldman Barrett back in 2019 for the podcast. So I'm going to drop that link as well if people want to listen to right from her what she had to say about this. Her and Rana had a great discussion, so that'll be a great resource as well. So Graham, thank you. That was all I had for you today. Thanks again for your time, and it was a pleasure speaking with you again as always.
As ever, thanks. Thanks for asking the questions and listening to me go on. So it's always a pleasure to talk about this stuff, as you know.
As Graham pointed out, we have taken great pains over 10 plus years in business to ensure that the technology we offer is ethical, accurate, and meaningful. The very extensive use of emotion AI across the industry, 70% of the world's largest advertisers, is a testament to the success of that effort. As a result of this work, these criticisms are not relevant to the technology used by Affectiva, a company used by the market research industry for the evaluation of audience response to content, advertising, and brand experiences. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Human-Centric AI Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to share any feedback you have on the show and weigh in on the discussion using hashtag Human-Centric AI Podcast. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.